Hey everybody, welcome to BitNote. We'll be playing video game music and talking about the games and having a bit of fun in the process. Hope you enjoy. Alright, to start things off, I'm going to play music from a game I haven't actually thought about for a while, but looking back, it just has some terrific music in it. The music is battle music, so I think that really gets you in the mood. Enjoy! Great stuff. That was Fight Version 1 by Noriyuki Iwadari, who's a big Japanese games music composer, by the way. He's actually composed music for Tokyo Disneyland Resort, so that's pretty much so a bit of diversity there. And it's from the game Grandia 2 by Game Arts. Now, Grandia was ported to a couple of different platforms, but I think people agree that the best version is the Dreamcast. Grandia 2, a sequel from Grandia, which was released for the Sega Saturn, is basically an RPG where you meet with this, you're playing as this guy mainly called Ryudu, who's kind of like a mercenary, although they call him Geohounds or something. And essentially, you have an innocent mission of taking this little priestess called Elena and take her to this tower for some religious ceremony that you haven't a clue about and don't really care in any event. But when you get to the tower, you realize something is pretty much mucked around and basically killed a lot of other people who were in the ceremony. Now, that's kind of bad, but apparently the girl seems to get all tense, and apparently, you know, like a lot of Japanese RPG games, it turns out that the entire world is in peril and only you are the only one who can actually do anything about it. But it's a really nice story to get there in the first place. When you end up going on a quest, you meet up with these characters, like this little kid who's got a medallion who has no idea what it's for, so obviously it's not going to be important in any way to the later of the game of the plot. You got this great big lion warrior, and you got this other weird person who red hairs who turns up mysteriously and you're never quite sure about. So it's always... Actually, now that I recall about it, they're not dead when you arrive there. It's just the ceremony goes kind of bad, just let's put it that way. But you travel the world, and a couple of times you reach cities that have got this strange little story or trouble that's afflicting them, and you have to solve it or figure it out some places. And you know, it's kind of a rule for role playing games like this: if you go into a city and there's this some mysterious caves that monsters are in, then you have to enter it at some point. It's just the way it is. It's like you have to solve this great big overarching quest, but oh, there's a lot of little things you have to do in the meantime. But and of course, you can't progress until you do. But Grandia 2 is just a fun game, really. I mean, one of its best aspects has got to be the... it's got bright graphics, and it's the story's kind of nice. It's a little confusing and twisted at times, but you know, it's pretty easy enough, and they're nice characters, and there are a couple of nice good moments to it. And the battle system, I mean, this is great. For starts, you know, they're not random encounters. You know, you see an enemy on the field, you run towards them, and if you sneak up on them from behind, you know, the battle mode starts and you have the initiative. But otherwise, if they do the same to you, then you're kind of screwed. But you have your what happens is it kind of takes place in a semi-real-time thing where you've got all your party members and you give them assorted actions and they sort of get to their commands. And so basically they all try to run to the enemies and like attack them or do the special move. But it's hard to explain. The moment you have to take an action, suddenly the action freezes and you have to make the next decision of what the character's meant to do. So it's really... really, really smooth, because the characters are running around the battle and you're making quick decisions. But I mean, it kind of, you know, like for instance, if your character's on one side of the screen and you want it to run over and attack another one, if the guy's on the other side of the screen, then that's a bad idea, because, you know, your character will have to run and avoid all these other monsters just to attack one enemy, where he could just attack one that's close by and then quickly be ready for the next attack. It's just... I like the way it's so involved that it seems like there's a battle going on in motion, but at the same time, it's still you basically making decisions turn-based. So it's just got this great combination making you feel you're in the thick of the battle, but still having the methodology of figuring out, okay, which attacks do I do use against which enemies and how effective should they be? So, lot diverse world, a lot of crazy stuff. And I don't know, it was just, I played it on the Dreamcast and I really loved it. And some great music and some interesting storylines and Grandia 2. Brilliant. Okay, with that, like I said, it was just great playing a game in battle arenas with that music playing in the background. But we're going to move on to another game now that was released around about the same era. And basically, it was a game that has a long series, Worms Armageddon. Now, Worms Armageddon has such a damn history behind it. It is developed by Team 17, and this is back in the early 90s, and I think they're still making Worms-based games today. And the idea was basically an idea that was very simple to another game around there. I think it was called Cannon Fodder, where essentially you had a bunch of little tanks on a battlefield with an uneven terrain, and there was a wind blowing, and you had to shoot a shell at your tanks, and the thing was, they were affected by trajectory, so you had to aim at the right angle and you had to take into account wind. So it was a very simple concept. So Team 17 took basically this concept, and then they made the tanks into worms, and they throw in a lot of interesting graphic styles. Then they made it that you could move the worms around, and critically, while they still gave you the basic mortar shot, they added a whole new set of weapons. And as the generations went by, the weapons became incredibly diverse. It's still turn-based, right? Everyone takes their turn and they'll have control of one of their worms to make a move, shoot it, you know, move around the map, shoot it, use the ninja rope and, you know, finish it off. But There's so many different weapons. There's like the homing pigeon, which is basically a pigeon that just shoots it. There's a holy hand grenade. This is like a grenade. You know, you have to get the trajectory right and it can bounce and everything. You see, there's a lot of strategy to this. If you're really good, you can throw a grenade so it'll bounce across the scenery and just blow up right when it's by the other worm. You know, it's all cartoony graphics and stuff. Holy hand grenade is like a gigantic explosion. And then there are like all these mines around the map. And so one of the fun things you can do is you can actually blast a mine so it falls down a slope and hits another worm and blows him up. And it's just there's so much chaos and so much fun. You can build girders and of course the ninja rope. This allows you to swing around the map. And you know, if you're really good, you can like swing quickly to the map, like drop a stick of dynamite right beside an enemy worm and then just shoot off in the other direction. Of course, if you're bad like me, you'll try to swing and just try to get the angle just right and then drop the stick of dynamite, but then find you can't swing out of the way and accidentally drop and land right beside the stick of dynamite. So while you do blow up your enemy worm, you kind of blow yourself up as well. There's just, actually, I think this is one of the games where sometimes screwing up is as much fun as winning at times. It's just a classic series of games, such tongue-in-cheek humor, and I don't know, it's just been going on for so many years. It's just, you always expect the next Worm game to come out soon. There have been a lot of various experiments, but the core concept, 2D plane, moving the worms, that's been classic. The music is by Bjørn Lyne, who's a Norwegian. He's a huge composer of TV and video game music, by the way. And if you want some more of his music, just check out his website online. He actually sells digital albums, including the one that this is from. And yes, this is the main theme, or also known as Worm Party 98. It's kind of a classic Worm theme that's been redone a few times, but this is the current version. And I guess it's... like I said, from Worms Armageddon, I think it's a good song. It plays during the title screens, and here you go.
Went to war, onwards and upwards, bigger weapons than before. Boggy B took cover, he shivered on patrol. The arms race crazy, simply way out of control. Then his friend threw it, the latest device. Boggy B went and got it, against all advice. His tail was split, and his energy lost. How many more will this dreaded war cost? Then came the nuke and the disease tumbling down. bug didn't get you, you'd probably drowned. But the worms battled on through hunger and pain, living to fight, just a victor again. And now it's the curtain call, the final onslaught. No better bullet could you possibly have bought. But spare a thought for Boggy, and with it his friend. So fight with their honour, and fight until the end.
Quite the song, isn't it? You know, I didn't expect the voice, actually. When I first played the game. It just plays during the title screen, and most of the time people are just too busy hitting the next entry. But for some reason, I was just let the controller by the side and was laying back, and then suddenly this voice popped up, and it's kind of chilling and kind of a bit of a serious take on the whole thing. But anyway, I think that's definitely something that definitely adds to the song anyway. All right, from Worms World Party, Worms Armageddon in the Worms series has definitely made its contribution to video game history, but I think that there's another, well, I mean, there are tons of other games that have done the same, or done similarly, or you know what I mean. So essentially I'm going to move on to something that probably even you have heard of. It's a very popular game, it's based on a movie franchise, and I'm just going to play the song right now.
We'll be right back.
Enjoy that. What you just heard was Antenna Cradle. It is from the. Actually, there were three composers for this game, so I'm not sure which specifically did the more amount, but by Graham Norgate, Grant Kirkhope, and Robin Beanland. And it's from the game classic GoldenEye 007 by Rare. First released on the Nintendo 64, and it was a killer app. I mean, it was one of those. It kind of defined the Nintendo 64, and it was one of the first times a first-person shooter got onto a console and kicked ass. It's, as you may have guessed, it's based on the classic Bond video game GoldenEye, and you know, GoldenEye was a great, fun, enjoyable action movie. I mean, it's Bond definitely a top form. I mean, obviously, with so many movies, you know, some people even consider it their favorite Bond film movie. I mean, there's just so many to choose, you know, you're not going to get any consensus on that, on which is the best Bond movie. But the movie was good, and the game was freaking excellent. I mean, it took a lot of inspiration. Oh, well, obviously, it followed the movie fairly closely. I mean, a lot of the same sets, generally the same. Each level was usually based on something in the movie. I mean, they didn't go nuts about it. They obviously made their own changes and made their own flips around and added their own side plots and everything, and that was fine, you know, but the levels were good. I mean, like, the whole first level is basically takes place on the dam that Bond jumps off and he's shooting his way through bad guys, and then the next one is in the complex. That last one you hear was basically at the towards the end where you're on the cradle, you know, that great big thing, satellite dish thing that's suspended in midair above the main dish itself. It's the game brought so many things. I mean, the people developing it actually even visited the Pinewood movie sets and then took photographs of the various of the sets so they could recreate them in the game and even like use textures in them. I mean, awesome. I mean, so it was really true to the movie, and the actual game did so many innovations. For a start, it mattered where you shot people. I mean, okay, that sounds kind of vague, but before then, first-person shooters were defined by Doom. You know, there were these enemies, and you kind of shot at them. But this one kind of seemed more realistic. You see, the enemies were, there were fewer enemies to take on at a time, but they seemed smarter. They seemed to take cover, and they took aim, and you just had to be careful and shot and everything. And it also introduced stealth to the first-person shooter genre. I mean, it's like if you shot someone or shot too many times, you know, other guards would come and actually hear you and try to take them on yourself. So you suddenly start to realize, you know, I have to be like Bond here. I have to actually be kind of stealthy, try to take out the enemies, get to the objective, and not necessarily alert every single guard in the place and get into a great big machine gun fight. Although, you know, the game certainly allowed you to do a few things with the bullets, with, you know, gunning enemies down. But I mean, like, you sort of realizing a couple of the enemies, you know, if you played it stealthily, you could just get the drop on your enemies. There was like one. Like, the classic thing is just, like, literally in the second level, you look down and you see a guy in the sitting down on the toilet, and if you take your silence gun, you can dispatch him and the guy in the next, well, you know, and the guy in the next cubicle, so that you can stealthily enter the toilet and invade the Russian chemical facility and deal with everything. So, I mean, it also did a huge amount for the multiplayer. Good times, you know, everyone would have, like, you know, split screen, and everyone would just plug it in and just go around and try the enemies. It actually, it kind of almost established that, you know, in order for a game console to be really successful, it should have a great big first-person shooter. And, you know, I mean, Microsoft tried the same thing with the only other console that had something like that with a success was Microsoft with Halo. But, I mean, like, GoldenEye 007 was doing it well before Microsoft got on the scene. And, yeah, it was followed up by a spiritual successor, Perfect Dark, and I think both games have been re-released in some form since then. But to finish up the show, I'm going to play some music from another level of GoldenEye 64, and then I'm going backwards. I'm going to finish up with some music from Grandia 2 again, this time from a place called, it's called League. And basically it's this music that plays in a city that you visit in Grandia 2. It has a great big airship, it's bright and colourful. They're such nice locales, I mean, in Grandia 2, but definitely with music like that, it really adds to the atmosphere. So thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed listening to BitNote. All the best, and keep on gaming.